Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, what's up? Well, it's Dean Blandino. Welcome to another episode of Good Calls. Joined by Travis Hansen and Joe Madrid. Feel the energy going into this show is a little down.
It's the COVID, man.
Everybody has been, it's been, right, 2020 has certainly in our lifetimes been this unprecedented type year, and there's been so much. And look, right, life isn't always easy breezy, and it certainly hasn't been in 2020. It just, you yearn for some sort of normalcy, and it feels like that gets further and further away, right? That's just... we're in the middle of this environment that seems to be very, I don't know what the right word is. Toxic, divisive. I don't know. It just feels like everybody is on edge and for obvious reasons, and no one knows what to expect next. And hopefully we can come out of this and we can have, you know, obviously this is a sports related show and we'll focus on sports. And I think sports are in many ways our escape, right? But sports can't escape what's going on. Like this impacts everything. And it's no longer I can turn on a game and kind of lose myself and forget about the problems in the world for a couple of hours, because the problems of the world are in the middle of sports and everything else. So it's just, I don't know. I do feel kind of down and
you don't even have Travis to give you some cheesy quote to pick you up. Cause he's
down too. Travis is the up the glass half full type guy. And I think what I need right now, Travis, is I need a pep talk. And so I'm going to give you 20 seconds to make me feel better. Okay. So go for it.
Dean, the water's flowing, man. It's going to keep flowing down, and we're going to get out of this. You know, we're going to keep climbing. We're going to be at the top of the mountain as soon as this all passes. And you know, we're going to look back on this and just think, that was just the COVID-19, 2020. Now we got through it. And
you know what?
That's all it was.
I don't know what the water flowing means.
I don't know either.
Typically, if you're at the top of the mountain, the water's flowing away from you. But I feel better. You made me laugh, and laughter is the best medicine.
Nice job, Trav.
That's what I need right now, too. I got both my kids crying. I hear them right now. I feel bad.
But what are the other six doing?
I don't have eight kids, you guys.
The other six are quiet. Let's talk some NFL news. Some pretty significant NFL news came out. One of those deals that I literally, until they announced the fines and the punishment, I had forgotten that this was a thing. Was the Patriots for filming at the Bengals
right?
Filming the sideline, right? Filming the Bengals sideline during a Browns game in Cleveland, and I had completely forgot about it. And the NFL announced the penalties, which were a fine of $1.1 million, a third round pick, I believe, in the 2021 draft. Which I think this will get a lot of eye rolls around the league, is that, and I don't know who, but certain Patriots, employees or whoever it may be, will have to go through NFL training on policies and guidelines. So that, like, to me is a big eye roll, because they know the guidelines and the policies.
Yeah, one guy lost his job too.
One guy lost his job. And this was such an interesting, because, you know, throughout the investigation, and this was certainly pre-COVID and everything else, they kind of separated this from the football operation. This was not right. This was the in-house video. This was a third party that was contracted to do, to do your job show, which. And they were focusing on an advanced scout and what an advanced scout does. And they feigned, they claimed ignorance, right? They didn't know they weren't supposed to be shooting the field. They didn't notify they didn't notify the Browns as what they were going to be doing at the time. So, And because I think I have it right, right? It was the Browns were playing the Bengals in Cleveland. Was that it? And the Patriots video group was there filming because they had the Bengals coming up. Is that the story?
That sounds...
Can you confirm that?
Let me try to find it.
So, Travis, just confirm that. It was in Cleveland, right? It was...
Yeah, in Cleveland on December 8th.
Yeah.
Cincinnati
at Cleveland. The Patriots had their video people there. And this was, again, not associated with the football operation. But when you look at the penalties, I mean, those are those types of penalties. When you start taking draft picks away, this bleeds over into the football operation. And whether, you know, there was no connection, whether the coaching staff or anyone in that area knew what was going on. But it just, when you take the history of the Patriots into consideration, it's hard to see this as an honest mistake, right? You just, I don't think there's anybody around the league, the other 31 franchises, that see this as just a misunderstanding. It's just, they don't. Like, I've been in
those. They've run out of honest mistakes.
I've been in those competition committee meetings. I've been in a lot of those, you know, those discussions were generated by things that the Patriots did or whatever. And they're not. Look, this is.
Well, everyone's always trying to find a loophole. That's just what sports are.
It's an advantage. You're going to try to use the rules, you know, gain an advantage within the rules. And I think the Patriots and Coach Belichick have been very good at that. But this is, you know, it's another chapter in this history as we talk about, right, there are going to be people that when you think about this 20-year span of what the Patriots have been able to accomplish, aside from, you know, the Celtics in the 50s and 60s or the UCLA, you know, men's basketball team, like Montreal Canadiens in the 50s and 60s, aside from those types of dynasties, this is the modern day dynasty. And over a course of 20 years to accomplish what they've accomplished, but you are going to have people that are going to put a big fat asterisk on this kind of window of time because of things like, right, Spygate and Deflategate and now this whole deal. It's just the reality of how some people are going to look at it. And I don't know if does it diminish what they've accomplished in your eyes? Does in either one of your eyes, do you see this as a black eye in terms of what, quite frankly, in the 21st century is the greatest sports team accomplishment so far? I mean,
I don't think so.
Can't argue with that. Does this kind of put, you know, kind of put it in a little bit of an asterisk there?
I say no.
Be question marks.
No way. I think everyone's doing it. They're the only ones that have gotten caught.
That just makes me wonder, are they just the worst at this? Because that's what I was going to say.
Really, like, bad at cheating?
Are they just really bad at cheating? Like everybody else, they always hear the saying, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So are they just the worst at cheating? So they're always getting caught. And it's like now Tom Brady has taken it to Tampa with him, and now he's getting in trouble for going to the wrong person's house. He was trying to go to the offensive coordinator's house. He wasn't supposed to. He's having workouts when he's not supposed to. He's doing all these things he's not supposed to. He's like the habitual line stepper. And then he learned that from Bill.
The HLS, the habitual line stepper.
I just think there's so much money on the line. There's so much riding on success in the NFL. Most people are going to do whatever they need to do, especially if they could say, hey, we're not hurting anybody. We're not, you know, I think everyone's doing it, but that could just be.
I was involved. I saw it from the inside out. Deflategate was overblown. Deflategate was blown so far out of proportion.
No pun intended.
And exactly. And it was a culmination of things. A lot of people around the league felt that the NFL was not as hard on the Patriots for Spygate as they should have been. And I feel like that had to play into it. To hire a law firm to go through. I mean, they went through everything. I was interviewed three times. I wasn't at the game. I wasn't involved on site. I was interviewed three times. They interviewed so many people, officials, everybody went through this, you know, spend millions and millions of dollars for this Wells report. when it was something that teams had been doing and continue to do. Quarterbacks like the footballs a certain way, and they're gonna have them at the temp at the PSI where their quarterback's gonna be comfortable. You know, Tom Brady likes it a little on the lower end, right? The PSI has to be between 12 and a half and 13 and a half pounds. That's what the rule book says. So Tom Brady wanted the footballs closer to 12 and a half. Aaron Rodgers wanted them closer to 13 and a half, personal preference. So they were going to make sure that Tom Brady was comfortable and those footballs were, and they used to bring the footballs to the officials and the officials would check them before the game and they would check the PSI, the air pressure, and they would tell, they would say, hey, listen, don't put more air in these footballs. If they're compliant, don't add air to it because, you know, Brady wanted it, you know, less inflated. And that's just the way it was. And, you know, air temperature, outside temperature impacts the pressure in the football. It does.
You could see that in your car when you're driving. When you start in the morning, your tires are...
To say that those balls, you know, are not going to be impacted on a cold day, you can't argue that. And it was something that just got blown out of proportion, and it actually could have been handled much cleaner with a fine and move on. And because, look, the Patriots didn't beat the Colts, whatever that was that day, 44 to whatever, because of the footballs. They just were the better team. And
I think when they catch something like that, they just have to – the league has to do something or it just looks bad to the public. To say, hey, that's just how it goes, people aren't going to be happy with that.
Well, not with the Patriots either because they had already had
– No, well, that was the thing. Any other team, it would not have been a big deal. It just wouldn't have been.
Right.
There's so many things that are blown out of proportion in the NFL.
Sure. And then you get into the, you know, now the Patriots continue. Negative news around the Patriots and then positive news for the Patriots. Who do they sign? They sign Cam Newton. And this had been, you know, this has been one of the things that have been speculated is where is Cam going to end up? And everybody kept coming back to how cool would it be for him to end up in New England, right? Brady leaves. They're two quarterbacks, right? Or Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer, who's feel like this is like his fourth time with the Patriots.
At least, right?
So they end up signing Cam 1 year deal, $7.5 million, which is amazing. You think about Cam Newton, former MVP, signing for a 1 year deal when you have, you know, I know Richard Sherman came out and said that was ridiculous when you have some of these backup quarterbacks and some of these other quarterbacks making big money. But it just the market is what it is, right? You're only going to get paid what somebody's willing to pay. And he wasn't going to get paid big money. Now he goes to the Patriots and he has a big year. He's going to get paid in 2021 if he stays healthy. And what I love about this and what's intriguing to me is that for 20 years, Patriots say everybody that knocks Tom Brady says he was a system quarterback, right? Well, look, the bottom line is what the Patriots did for 20 years and what Belichick did, everything they did was to make Tom Brady comfortable, was because they saw him as their biggest chance to be successful. And so we're going to design our game plan, and everything else is going to be revolve around Tom Brady and his skill set, which is smart. You put people in position to be successful, to play to their strengths. They're going to do that for Cam Newton. If he stays healthy, this could be like, this is going to be really interesting. Cause I remember going back before pre-Brady with the Patriots. I remember Ray Lucas, who went to Rutgers, who a lot of the guys that I grew up with in Jersey were friends with. You know, Ray Lucas had some success with the Patriots because he was a dual threat quarterback, didn't play that often, but when he went in, Belichick designed things that were suited to his skill set. And I'm not comparing Ray Lucas to Cam Newton. And when people say, you know, Cam Newton is not a running quarterback. Cam Newton is a good quarterback. When he's healthy, like, yes, he's dual threat because he's run for what, 4,500 yards in his career. And he could, you know, he's had those types of seasons. But Cam Newton, healthy Cam Newton with Bill Belichick designing a system for him could be, it's scary. It's scary to think what that could be. I'm excited
nasty
to see what could happen.
He was healthy. Good, you know, the year of Super Bowl 50. The dude was nasty. He just is inconsistent.
Well, yeah, he's and I think he's like his accuracy has always been an issue. He doesn't have you think about the arm strength, and the arm strength is there, but he doesn't necessarily have the touch like a Patrick Mahomes or some of these other quarterbacks have. But he's, I don't know if you guys ever had the chance to see him in person.
He's massive.
He is, when I've been on the sideline near him, and if you didn't see his number, you'd see him next to defensive linemen, and you weren't sure who the quarterback was and who the defensive lineman was. He is a massive, massive human being.
Of course.
And again, it's just going to be interesting to see, how they design a system around him. And I can't imagine, I think he's going to be the starting quarterback if he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, the reason the contract is so low, it's an incentive-based deal that he could get up to $7.5 million, is because he's coming off an ankle injury. He's coming off of a shoulder injury. And he's got a lot to prove. And he's gonna have the chance to compete for that starting job and probably win it over two guys he's more talented than. The crazy thing I think about with Cam Newton is I always go back to that play in the Super Bowl. It's in the fourth quarter. I think it was like 3rd and 10. He gets strip-sacked. And he doesn't dive on the football.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to me, I look at that and I just go, I don't want this guy on my team. This is the Super Bowl. They're down 6 points at the time. Like that to me is the biggest game of your career. Like that.
That was my favorite play. That was my favorite play.
There's always going to be, there's knocks on him in terms of, some of the way he's handled. He comes across as like kind of like pouty at times, right? Especially right. That Super Bowl after the post game, he got a lot of flack, but guess what? I mean, he just lost the Super Bowl, and now he's got to sit up there and answer questions. That'd be hard.
And maybe he felt bad because he didn't dive on that ball. So who knows what his emotions are?
I love that play, Trav. I love that. I had the biggest bet I ever made was on the Broncos in that Super Bowl. I loved that play. Loved Cam for that. Thanks,
it
Cam.
That was Super Bowl 50. 50. It wasn't that particularly great game.
No, that Super Bowl was terrible.
Here's my story about Super Bowl 50. Okay.
All right.
So you remember, former referee, good guy, Mike Carey. Mike Carey went to CBS and did what I do and what Pereira does and Gene Steratore. He was
trying to do what you guys do.
Yeah. And Mike is a smart guy. Mike knows the rules, intelligent guy. And it's TV is not for everybody. It's hard, right? It's just hard. And it just didn't suit him. And so before the game, we have, we have production meetings with the crew and CBS. And so it's Lance Barrow, who's the longtime, lead producer for CBS on the football side, also does golf, great guy. Then you have Nance, and it was Phil Simms at the time. This was before Romo. And Mike Carey, and so you have this meeting with the officiating group and the referee, and we're talking about if there's a replay review. And Mike had a tough year, and there was a lot of, every time Mike Carey came on the air, it felt like Twitter had a field day. And, so we said, listen, if there's a replay review, we will call the truck, and we will let you know what we're going to do before we do it. So then you can start talking about it, and then Mike can talk about it, and we're all on the same page, and it'll look good, right? Mike can explain it, blah, 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 unless he absolutely disagrees. But this is how we're going to do it. So in the first quarter, I don't know if you remember, there's a pass play ruled incomplete on the field. Panthers had the ball. It was a third down play. It was a huge play in the game early on because Panthers complete the first down, the pass for first down. It's ruled incomplete on the field, goes to review. We let it stand. It was just too close. Whatever they ruled on the field, we were going to stay with it. So I have one of the guys in the replay booth as we're going through this, and we're like, okay, we can't see if the ball hit the ground or not. It's too close. I say, call CBS and let them know we're going to let it stand. So never forget, Jay Reed, who worked with me at the NFL, still works at the NFL. He picks up the phone, and like I hear him like say hello to somebody, and then I hear him like not say anything. And I look, did you tell CBS that we're going to let it stand. And he's like, yeah, but Mike Carey just said that you're going to overturn it on the air. And I'm like, what are they doing? So we come out and we say, ruling on the field stands. Mike Carey's already explained that it's going to be overturned. They never go back to him again. And he doesn't get his contract renewed by CBS after that. And that was the thing. Like, we talked about it. I was like, we'll tell you what we're going to do. Like, don't say anything. And it was just like, it was interesting.
Oh, so you guys were telling him, him before, so he doesn't call on the air.
Yeah.
So listeners know that's not how it goes down. When you're in studio, you don't know what the call is.
Oh, no, I don't
that's
know.
That's not what the norm.
But this was the spec, right? The Super Bowl, it's a special, right? Obviously, it's a different circumstance. And, you know, and we've done that, right? The Super Bowl last year when we had it, when Fox had it, you know, they were going to call the truck on a replay review and let you know, the truck know, so Mike would know to, you know, what to say. It's just, it was so, like, just like, I just so frustrating, because I was like, listen, what, come on. I mean, we're trying to help here. And, you know, don't jump the gun. But that was Super Bowl 50. And Ron Rivera will still to this day debate me on that call. And I always tell him the same thing. Hey, if they had ruled it a catch, it would have stayed a catch. And it's a big play, because then the I think the next play or two plays later, there's a strip sack and the Broncos get the ball. So ended up being a big play. So Patriots, Cam Newton, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about college football. Something as we think about COVID, and this is something that I don't think a lot of people understand, right? We think about, okay, players and coaches and everything else, but right, there's another group out there, the officials, that are going to have to be prepared, and there's going to be protocols that they're going to have to go through. One of the calls I was on actually on Monday was with one of the football manufacturers for college football, and talking about what we can do with the footballs to ensure that they are, you know, sanitized, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to look at this two ways. You're going to look at this as, you know, is there a process where we can clean the footballs, and then secondly, a protocol as to who's handling the footballs. Can we limit the number of people that are handling the footballs? And how can we ensure that a football doesn't become contaminated? So the conversation, basically, there's three options at this point. There's companies that have, you know, a UV solution, right? UV light is supposedly, the UV light is supposed to kill 99% of germs, including COVID. So you take the footballs and you put them into this box, and it has UV light, almost like a tanning booth for the footballs. So going back to my Guido days, right, GTL, right? If you don't know what GTL stands for, look it up, right? Travis, what does GTL stand for?
Gym Tan Laundry, Jersey Shore.
That's right, baby. Gym Tan Laundry. So
it's t-shirt time.
So the UV light, right, you would have the footballs, you would put each team prepares typically, you know, 8 to 10 footballs. The rule book says 6 for each game. You prepare 8 to 10 footballs that you're going to use on offense. So you would take those footballs, have them in this UV tanning bed before the game. And then you would have to ensure that those footballs are handled by the ball people. And then if that ball goes outside, because think about, you know, I think you're going to have limited people on the sideline, but when people are on the sideline and the ball goes on the sideline, what do people do immediately? They pick it up, right? Or goes in the stands. Now, don't touch the football, because if you touch that football, it's going to be contaminated and it's going to have to go into quarantine before it gets cleaned again. So there's a UV light option. There's a basically like a hand sanitizer solution that's 80% isopropyl alcohol. Come on, Joe, you're the chemist of the group.
Yeah, alcohol.
So I gave Dina a blank look on that one.
It's a spray. It's a spray that you would spray on the football. It's alcohol based, and it would, you know, eliminate 99% of the germs, something like that. Yeah, but it would be a spray, And it would dry quickly because it's alcohol based, and then you could do it that way, which would be a less expensive option. And then there's others that include a water based solution, which you could, you know, clean the football and but that would take a little bit longer. But the whole thing is, when you think about footballs, you don't want to you know, change the integrity of the football, you know, change the tackiness or the stickiness or any of that stuff. So it's going to be interesting. It's like, these are the conversations we never thought we would be having that we're currently having. We're talking about, you know, chain crews, you know, do they have to, you know, are they going to have to be tested because they're on the sideline? Are they going to wear masks? You look at chain crews across the country,
all old guys
are typically older people, right? So now, are you going to have younger people, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but are you going to have, you know, these older people that are on these chain crews that are in this at-risk, you know, demographic? So it's chain crews, it's replay officials, it's on-field officials, it's ball people, you know, people that are on the ball crew, everybody that is going to have contact with a football or a player or a coach is going to have to be tested. And it's so many layers to this that it's just, it's a big, big hill to climb before the season. And
Dean, you could let them know, I'm available for employment. I could move them chains and I'm young.
There you go. You can be on the chain.
And I'm not scared of the COVID, bro. I'm in.
What do you want? Okay, Joe. So I'll give you the pick of the litter. You want to be on the chain crew. What do you want to be? Do you want to be the drive start guy? So the drive start guy, wherever the drive starts, so say it's a touchback and Alabama gets the ball first and 10 at the 25.
Yeah.
You sit there with a stick and you stay there the entire drive. Okay. So that's the drive start guy. Do you want to be on the actual chains? Do you want to be on the front stake or the back stake? So they spread out the 10-yard chain, and the front stake guy, yeah, you're the guy that comes out.
That's who I want.
That's the real exciting one.
I want to be
a measurement, because you come out and you hand it to the official.
I want to be active and on the field. Yeah, I want to be that dude. I don't want to be
Do you want to be the line of scrimmage guy? Do you want to be the guy where you're always at the line of scrimmage? So wherever the ball goes, you're going to be.
No, I think I want to be the other one. The dude who
you want to be the chain guy.
Yeah. Give me some
first
camera
down
time.
Is where the action is.
That's where you want to be.
Give me a real tight jersey, hockey style.
There's also a guy that records the information, the card guy, the down, the distance, the yard line.
Is this real? Are you joking?
So you're more of like a paper person, like a pencil pusher. You could do that.
Are you serious? Is this all real? There's four dudes.
There's like nine dudes.
Nine dudes.
There's nine.
I feel like there are some female.
There are some female chain crew. Not enough, but there are female chain crew.
I feel like it's something. It's also overblown.
There's just too many people to do a very simple job.
Here's one more before we go. Then another story that came up on the call, actually. So you remember the kick six game? Remember Auburn, Alabama, yep. Right? Famous. Obviously, that's a rivalry, that the Iron Bowl, and you know, if you're from the South, obviously you know all about that. But it's certainly, so the kick six game, right? That football, so the field, right? Alabama, the game is tied. Alabama attempts a long field goal at the end of regulation. I think it was Chris Davis, who was the Auburn player, is in the end zone. He catches the short field goal and returns it 100 and however many yards for a touchdown to win the game. So the equipment manager, everybody's celebrating, right? And they're all throwing their helmets. So you don't think about this, but they're all throwing their helmets, and the equipment manager is responsible for those helmets. So instead of celebrating, the equipment manager is talking to his assistants that we need to get 80-something helmets. Right, with all of the fans and everybody else, and they recovered all but one of the helmets. Okay, so you think about the mayhem of what happens, but then the next thing is they got to get the football. Like, you have to get that football. So they recover the football, and so the thing is, right, each team uses their own footballs. So that football is actually an Alabama football.
Right.
But Alabama is one of the there's only, I think, two or three teams, Alabama, Georgia Tech, and I think Michigan is doing it this year, that don't put their logo on the football. So that football is displayed in Auburn at the university, but people are upset because it doesn't have the script A. Hmm. And like, cause that would have been, but, and the reason why Alabama footballs don't have the A is because they couldn't, when they had it, they couldn't keep it. People were stealing footballs because it had the Alabama. So now they just don't put the logo on because they're worried about, you know, you can't keep a football because Alabama obviously is such a big time program. So there's
the NFL balls are cool with the logo painted on, and it's like, they're really cool. Yeah.
No, they're really cool. And it's, you know, and that's part of, and those logos, that's how the officials know there's the right football in the game.
Sure.
Right. So, because if the Patriots on offense, then we need to have a New England ball versus the Ravens on offense. And that's how they know. So, you know, it's interesting. You think about all these things that go on behind the scenes. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll update on the rest of the sports world and the return to sports in 2020. Next on Good Call. Hey, what's up? We're back on Good Call. Smooth is a little bit better since Travis gave us a pep talk.
I killed that.
But during the break, he got us down again on a lot of COVID stuff. But let's talk positives. Let's talk MLB returning. Travis, what are kind of the details? What's the latest?
Yeah, the teams are releasing 60-man rosters. Not everyone has gone to 60 yet, but at some point, you know, they're going to have to cut down. And we've kind of broke that down into 30 players the first 2 weeks, then down to 28, then down to 26 for the rest of the season. Everyone else is on what they're calling the taxi squad. The taxi squad was an old term they used in football back in like how long ago, 2030s or the 40s, or how long ago was that term?
Well, yeah, the taxi squad, that's the practice squad.
But they don't call it the taxi squad anymore. It's great.
No, and that's – and I think as you think about the 60-man rosters, one of the reasons like some teams I know – I forget which team it was, the White Sox or the Tigers, only listed 44 players, because the thing is, if you add somebody to your 60, then and then you eventually say another team cuts a player and you want to pick that player up, if you cut somebody, they have to go through waivers, and so any one of the other teams can pick them up before you could re-sign them. So I think teams are just wary of that. And then, like Travis said, the first 2 weeks of the season, you'll have 30 players on the active roster. Then it'll go to 28 the next 2 weeks, and then 26 for the rest of the season. And everybody else will be available for, you know, basically call-ups and things like that. If you do have people, you know, getting sick or testing positive, and already, you know, three players reported have opted out for 2020. Two players from the Nationals, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross. You know, I know Ryan Zimmerman has a newborn. His wife has some health issues, so obvious concerns there. Michael Leake from the Diamondbacks also opting out from the 2020 season. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, Ryan Zimmerman, you know, probably not right now at this point in his career. Still a pretty good player, but he's not. I wouldn't call him the player that he once was, but it's going to be interesting if like a Cody Bellinger or, you know, somebody of that stature hops out, you know, what the, you know, kind of what the pushback will be on that.
Well, think about it too. Like what is a guy like Mike Trout or Cody Bellinger who has a huge contract, what does he have to gain by playing? Like, I'm just going to sit this one out. I don't want to get sick. I don't want people around me to get sick. Like, I'm going to sit out and make my, you know, whatever X amount of millions I'm going to make, and it's not going to hurt my reputation.
I think I get that, but I also think about, you know, there's if you're a competitor and you just think about what we're doing, think about everybody. And I certainly can only speak for myself, and I feel blessed. I'm certainly not as impacted as others, but I want to get back to work.
Yeah.
Like I want to get back out there. I want to get back in the studio, you know? I think there's a desire to get back out. And again, that sense of normalcy. So I think a lot of people are going to feel that way. And you know, there's no COVID or not, there's no risk-free environment.
Sure. Right?
every time we step out of our bed, we're at risk of something. And it's just, that's the reality of it. And as you know, my favorite term from the 2019 NFL football season, this is the world
we're in.
Is the world we're in.
I thought you were going to go with this is the new normal, and I was just going to jump through the...
No, Joe doesn't like the new normal. So I'm reverting back to this is the world we live in. You know, the rule changes we talked about last week, same deal. You know, the universal DH this year. Extra innings are going to start with a runner on second. I like the kind of the you can't argue and no fighting, no spitting prohibited. How are you going to police that? I don't know.
What's going to be the penalty for that? Did we talk about that?
Because that's like muscle memory, man.
Yeah.
You're up. I play baseball. We all play baseball. You're up. You're in the batter's box. You step out. You spit. Right. That's not that you don't even think about it.
Yeah, guys spit on your hands or on their hands. You can get in trouble for spitting on your own hands.
You don't even think about it. So I don't know. I would imagine they're going to be lenient on that. I can't imagine what's the umpire going to do. Hey, don't spit. All right, good. I like the fact I love the three batter minimum rule in general. I think that makes sense to, less pitchers, less people being, entering the game. It's all good. Any player can appear as a pitcher, which is a normal rule.
They were going to get rid of that, though. They were going to make it so you couldn't have position.
Yeah, I like the.
I like it too. It makes it fun.
I like the. You know, when it's 18-1, do you really want to waste an arm in the dugout in the bullpen?
Well, it's always some of the best baseball memories. You got the guy throwing 86-mile-an-hour fastball. That's kind of fast, but like he's throwing like 75-mile-an-hour fastballs, and his curveball's down to like 59, and you don't see that. And guys in the dugout are laughing.
I would love to know what the overall ERA is for even just the last 5 years,
right,
for non-pitchers coming, because you do see some of them, like, they do pretty well. They get out of the inning, maybe they give up a run or two. Because major league batters aren't used to, a 65-mile-per-hour, EFIS pitch or whatever. So... but I think that's interesting. The other things, I know Travis, you had said that I guess two of the Twins coaches will not be working games just because of the health concerns and being, a little bit older.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see that. Another bit of news that I read, the Blue Jays, they are going to be able to play in Toronto. I know that was a concern. If they were going to have to play in Dunedin, which is their spring training facility in Florida, that would have, created some issues. So being able to play in Toronto will be a positive. And obviously, the whole border thing and the border still closed to Canada is going to be something that we have to consider. Switching gears to the NBA, I think, again, we've kind of gone through what everything that's going to happen. The season's going to resume. Looks like end of July. So, you're going to have training camps coming up pretty soon here in Orlando, starting the 9th, three inter-squad scrimmages. And then you're going to have those seeding games, which are going to be really the first 2 weeks, which are your play-in tournaments. And then the playoffs are going to be mid-August. And that's going to be the season. Adam Silver said on Monday, the NBA return plan may not be for everyone. And we're already seeing several players say they're not gonna take part in the 2020 season. The Lakers, Avery Bradley, whose son has a respiratory illness. Portland, Trevor Ariza, who's actually spending time with his son. He's in the middle of a custody battle, so he's going to take some time away to spend time with his son. Davis, this one's interesting. Davis Bertans from the Washington Wizards, who's in line for a big contract news, who has had injury issues, not health issues necessarily in terms of like COVID, but ACL and things like that. So I'm not going to put at risk that big next contract. So he's going to sit out. Willie Cauley-Stein with the Mavericks, he's expecting a child. DeMarcus Cousins, recovering from injury, focusing on 2021. DeMarcus Cousins, what was it, Joe? 3 years ago was... like, you consider him a top 10 player, and now he's an afterthought.
Yeah.
What? He tore his Achilles. He
the Lakers cut him.
This guy was legit. Like, I remember, I mean, I played fantasy basketball. This guy was like always a top pick for a big man. And now he's kind of an afterthought. And then, you know, I know the Nets, Wilson Chandler, citing family health concerns, is not going to play. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And then the NHL, nothing new on the NHL front. You're going to have the 24 team playoff tournament, which I think is going to be really exciting. Training camp start July 10th. And then everything, if the health and safety conditions allow, then the parties have reached an agreement on resuming play. What the length of training camp is going to be and the start date is going to be determined at a future date. So it's kind of where we are right now. Still getting ready. You know, we haven't seen any spring training or any kind of training camp yet. It's right around the corner. And obviously, you know, we've got golf going on and NASCAR allegedly, and other things. You know, hopefully these things can go off and we'll, you know, we'll be able to do it safely and we'll be playing these sports again. And if that goes well, if the next month and a half or so goes well, I think that's going to bode well for the NFL and college football. And we can kind of see those seasons take place and hopefully they take place without any delay. And that would be, imagine NFL and college football, you know, not, there's going to be some impact, but if they can start on time, I think that would be a win for a lot of people.
You know, I've got a question for you, Dean.
Yeah.
If let's say football never comes back, what would you do for a living?
If it never comes back?
Yeah, let's just say football is over. Never, there's no more football. What are you going to do?
There's no more football.
Nope. All the balls are gone.
I'd actually, you know what I would do? I would focus on my writing and I would go start doing stand up again.
Great answer.
I want to see you stand up at some point.
Yeah. I've got a couple of screenplay ideas. I'm working on with a mutual friend, Joe knows. We're working on a scripted drama / comedy that revolves around football and officials. So
I've read the script.
You know,
it's
we
good.
Just had another meeting with my agents and our scripted group at WME, and hopefully we can make that happen. And maybe I won't have to. Maybe I won't have to do rules and analysis anymore, Joe. Maybe I can just, and here's a segue for after the break. Maybe I can just do my writing, my stand-up, and my cameos. For a break. Next on Good Calls, we're going to talk how good am I at cameos. I'm Cameo Performer of the Year. We'll go through one of my cameos next on Good Calls. All right, we're back on Good Calls. We've covered sports. Now we're gonna dive into the world, the other world, the world of every other day life, everyday life. Cameo. You guys are familiar with Cameo? You're familiar with this app? Cameo?
Oh yeah, never used it, but I always hear about you doing it.
Cameo is they came up with a really great idea. So Cameo is you can get. And I won't say celebrities because I'm on it, but there's different levels of celebrity. I'm definitely not the least famous person on Cameo. I can 100% say that.
I feel like Travis should have a Cameo account.
What's that?
I think you should nominate Travis to have a Cameo account.
Yes.
Producer of the Good Calls episode of the Good Calls podcast.
So you can go on and you can get your favorite. Some A-list, some B-list, mostly C-list, some D-list celebrity to send your friend, your family, whoever it is, a short video message. Cameo takes a percentage. The person doing the video gets the other part of it, the majority of it. So Cameo approached me about doing it. I thought it was a great idea. Went online, you record a profile video, and then people just request you on the app. And you know, I've gotten a bunch of requests. I charge $25, which you know, I feel like is a pretty fair price. And but these guys, Travis and Joe, know I put my heart and soul. For your $25, you are getting the production value you're getting is off the charts. And I've seen other cameos that other people have done. And quite frankly, I feel like you're getting more for your money with me. Just saying.
What was that? Vince Neil you showed us that time, right? He just like mailed it in. Like,
but that was amazing because he was wasted.
Yeah, right.
And he was mumbling. And you would expect, like, if I ask Vince Neil for a cameo, like, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a hammered Vince Neil mumbling. And I'm like, I'm going to show that to all my friends.
I will say you do a great job on the cameos.
I go above and beyond. And today I got another 5-star rating on my whatever, 800th in a row. And I shared the video, and I want you guys to watch it and critique the video. And you can explain while you're watching it, explain kind of the jux. I have the, if you need the storyboard, I can email you the storyboard for the video.
I watched it before we did this, before Joe texted that we would do it on the show.
Yeah.
And just watching it, like, you put in the time, you put together like a PowerPoint.
Yes.
For these guys, and you went through. So the guy must have reached out to have you give their draft order for their fantasy football.
Their draft order, yeah.
Yeah. And I was laughing when the first three guys that you named in 14, 13, 12, all in that drafting order, were all named Mike. And then you finish, and there's one guy who has his initials is probably his name. And you're like, these are the most boring names.
It was the worst. Every draft order I picked, it's like you had like the Greek and Joey Walnuts,
right?
And you know, like whatever. And this was like Tom, Chris. It's just a bunch of white guys, and it was the worst named ever. So I did their draft order, and I did a PowerPoint, and I listed the picks, and I put all the mics together because I wanted there to be confusion and chaos when it got to that pick. Cause like, okay, who's, is it Mike L? Is it Mike B? Who's, cause you have six picks in a row with Mike and you're like, which Mike is it? And if there's a trade.
Yeah. You go through like, oh, if they're doing the snake draft, yeah, they're going to have six mics in a row. It's going to be gonna chaos.
Have six mics in a row, 12, hilarious. 13, 14 at the end of round one. And then 1, 2, and 3 at the top of round two are all going to be Mike. And so I threw in a party bus reference. Like, that's what you're getting for your $25. So trust me, it takes time. You're not going to get it. I have 4 days to do it. And sometimes it takes me 4 days to come up with the concept, to put the script together, to get the lighting right. So, but you know, you'll get it in your 4-day window.
We should maybe do a documentary, a short documentary series on the 4 days to cameo with Dean Blandino.
I like that. The 4 days, that's, I like that.
Wow. See, that's why he needs
and there was,
account.
We did, you know, that, and I think I told you guys this, the Super Bowl, when I was at the game and I was talking to, I forget who I was talking to, but I was like, I got a cameo request and I was like, I can't give this guy at the Super Bowl on the field cameo for $25. Like, what are all the other people that I've given? Like, I can't do that. I'm sorry. Like, I can't give you that cameo for $25 when everybody else got either the studio or my house.
There should be surcharging. Like, you know, if you're at a certain place, you should be able to charge more.
I should be able to say, hey, I'm at my buddy Sly Stallone's house. Have I told you that story? Have I ever told you that story? I was at Sylvester.
Yeah, we've heard the story.
Have I ever told you that?
I've heard it, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think that's a good.
Listen, Dean,
again.
Hold on. I need the floor for a second. You know I love you and you're my boy. You're one of my best friends, but I have to give you a bad critiquing on this last one. There was a lot of camera shaking. It's just the production. It wasn't where it usually is. It's not what I'm used to.
Cell phone. I don't have a tripod.
Well, you should. You should have a gimbal.
I have one. Do you want me to set up the tripod for the cell phone? I'll use that from now on.
No. You should have a gimbal.
What's a gimbal?
You know what? I'm going to show you what a gimbal is.
I think I have
since
one.
We're on Zoom.
It's kind of like a makeshift steady cam. So it keeps your camera steady when you move it
it's
around.
It's on like a gimbal is what it's called. It's this thing.
Yeah.
You see it, and it just no matter what, you're always as you move, the camera's always not swaying. I mean, it was a lot of shakiness on that one. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, but that was that it's like indie documentary style filming.
That's fair.
It's like Blair Witch.
Okay.
Style.
But I will say I was very impressed with the script and the PowerPoint presentation. It was funny. So
you
I would give it
like you didn't think the cinematography was up to par.
Hey, listen, I'm used to
but the writing.
The writing was great. Acting was great. But yeah, the cameraman, I have to give you a solid 4.5.
All right. Okay. That's fair. I always want people to be honest with me.
Another thing that I wanted to bring up is, did you guys hear about Dr. Dre?
No. What happened with Dr. Dre?
His wife filed for divorce today. No prenup. Dude's worth $1 billion. Yeah.
Oh, that's going to cost him.
Bill. He's just going to write a $500 million check. Bing. Poor dude.
That goes back to the old Eddie Murphy bit about Johnny Carson. And he's like Johnny Carson going through his divorce. He's like, I'm sure Johnny Carson had like $300 million and had to give somebody $150 million. He goes, if you had $5, you'd be upset if you had to give somebody $250. And he's got to give his wife $150 million. And he's like, and I'm pretty sure she knew going in. He's like, hey, I'm John. He's like, I know who you are.
Yeah. So that's
going to be a big divorce.
Sorry, Joe.
I'm looking at some of the other guys on Cameo, looking at the cost. Charlie Sheen, $350, guaranteed he doesn't put the time that you put in.
No way.
Should we start a fund just to rate them? That could be a bit on the show. Every week we just rate a cameo performance.
Let's order a cameo. Okay, let's order a cameo for Charlie. I'll fund the cameo.
That would be fantastic.
And we can rank the cameo.
It's a great idea.
All right, well, we'll do that.
Well, then we can even start with this guy, $5, Chris Gorham. He's an actor.
See, if he's on, why is Travis Hansen not on?
Because nobody knows who I am.
You're the producer of the Good Calls podcast. What are you talking about?
Oh, Google.
What's he been in?
I don't know. Let's look him up.
I feel like it's not even worth it. Why would he be on for $5? Because he's going to get 75%. What's 75% of $5? He's getting like...
He's best known for his ABC series, Ugly Betty. Anyone watch that?
I remember Ugly Betty. I never watch it, but I know the show.
Yeah, he's getting $375 a cameo.
It's not worth his time.
Well, he's probably mailing it in. Unlike me, who puts in a lot of work.
You know, what he probably is doing is all of his friends are doing it just for fun. So it's like, look, I'm on Cameo.
Let's come up. Okay, so what we're going to do is I'll order the cameos. We'll come up. We'll do a Charlie Sheen, a Chris Gorham, and let's pick one more, like a mid-range one, and we'll see what's the most bang for the buck.
It's fair. And we'll do the same script. We'll do the same message. I like that.
So we got to find one in like the 100, 150
one,
range.
One like 100. So this is going to cost me, right?
$500
to come up with this. But
well, I mean, come on.
Right. In the middle of a pandemic, right? not sure if I'm going to have a job in the fall, but I'm spending $500 to compare cameos.
Well, don't worry.
$100 for Tommy Tiny Lister.
Ooh, tiny. You know who Tiny Lister is.
Of course, from Friday.
Debo,
yeah, of course.
Wow. You know, I actually like that. Okay, Charlie Sheen, Debo, and make that list. We'll come up with this. We'll come up with a, maybe we'll do like a happy birthday. We'll come up, my friend Joe's having a birthday. He's been down on his luck lately. He's down with everything that's going on in the world, and he really needs a pick-me-up. And he is a big fan. I don't know how he's going to be a big fan of Charlie Gorham, but we're going to come up with that, and we'll see who comes up with the best cameo.
I love it. It's a good one.
Plan. All right, cool. The other thing, you know, what I was thinking about, we've talked about this planned dancing thing and how white people really like planned dancing. Because if you know, we're not allowed to talk about
that. I don't know.
Did we talk about planned dancing?
We have talked about planned dancing, but we got to be very careful about who we're saying enjoys planned dancing.
Everybody enjoys a good planned dance. I'm saying white people really gravitate to planned dancing.
We have video proof.
If you tell us what to do, we can practice it. That's why on TikTok, everybody's a good dancer.
Oh my God.
Right?
Everybody's an amazing dancer.
Because it's a quick snippet. You can practice it. You can get the moves down. The true indication of a good dancer is when it's not planned, music comes on, and you're just dancing.
You're just going.
You're just dancing.
Just moving right? with the
That's
music.
That's how you know a good dancer between a good planned dancer. Okay. When you're at a bar or a club, not that any of us have been lately, or anywhere where music is playing, an outdoor festival, whatever, somebody's playing their radio loud, and you can tell who's a good dancer just in that moment, who has rhythm, who has the planned dancers are just, that's all scripted.
I agree. And you know, it's never, we talked about this last summer. I've been talking about planned dancing for two summers now because of, you know, to the right, that song, the dance floor just always gets overcrowded. And then like a good song to dance who comes on, dance floor is empty. But I didn't think about this. TikTok is really just planned dancing on an app.
That's all it is.
You just brought me to it. I just realized that.
Anybody could do it.
I don't know. It's hard. My daughter tries to do some TikToks with me. She tries to have me do TikToks with her, and she's so good at it, and it takes me a minute. And I feel like I'm actually a pretty good real life dancer, but I can't TikTok her.
You have been on Soul Train more than once.
Twice. So
well, you guys know my dancing. I've won a dance.
You've won contests.
Before.
You've won this contests. We know. Fifth grade, Wyoming, which was probably, you know, a really stacked field there.
Let's just say I'm better than I was then. So.
Oh, so you've actually improved. All right. That makes sense.
You know, I just, news brief. I just saw that the beaches are closing for 4th of July weekend in LA.
Yeah, too many people there?
There's going to be too many people.
They close all the beaches for 4th of July.
That makes sense. Because 4th of July is going to be a complete, nobody cares and everybody's going to. So I think that makes perfect sense.
Just write the whole year off.
Look, we're all healthy. We're all still, you know,
where were you going with the planned dancing thing?
I just wanted to talk about who's a good dancer and who isn't.
Oh, I have a theory on who's a good dancer. There's three types of dancers. Two are good. One is bad.
All right.
So you have the guy who's like a really good dancer. He's, you know, he could dance. So obviously he's a good dancer. Then you have the guy who's just out there having a blast, just throwing his arms around. He knows he's not sexy.
That's fun, though. He's fun.
He's the fun, good dancer.
He's fun to hang out with and watch.
But the only bad dancer?
I think the next guy's not fun, though.
Yeah, the only bad dancer is the guy who thinks he's the good dancer, but he's not.
Right.
Right? He's doing these hip and shoulder movements. That guy is not a good dancer. And I know a couple of them. So that's my theory on good dancers.
Yeah, having fun guy, like no one can fault that guy. Like that's fun. Like go ahead, have a good time. Go with it. Everybody's having a good time.
The one where you hold the back of your foot and pulsate weirdly, oddly, you know. I love that guy.
Yeah, doing the sprinkler, the guy doing the shopping cart. Those are my moves.
Those are your
moves. Why I win dance contests.
Is that what you won the dance contest with?
Probably. The sprinkler, I'm sure, was in there.
I'm sure it was in there.
I probably jumped over the leg. You know, you guys know that move where you hold the one leg and you jump over it. Like
they called that the MR2.
Did you know? I used to be able to do that. We practiced that in my basement, me and my brother, and I used to be able to do the jump through the leg.
The one going back over was always the one I couldn't do.
I couldn't do the back one. I could do the front one.
That one was hard.
I would go out on a limb and say I probably could still do it.
Well, yeah, you're so athletic, right?
We'll put that on the when I kick the field goal. We'll do that right after I make it.
That'll be your celebration when you make it.
If I practiced, I could. If I just focused on that for the next couple of days, I could do it. But I don't. I've got too much other things going on. I'm jumping rope in my living room. So, speaking of good dancing, I watched this show on the Discovery Channel about animals. And so I want you guys to think about, because I was watching the show about sharks and predators and when sharks were predators and when they were predated on, if that's a word.
Wow.
And it was insane. Like sea lions attacking sharks. Mm. And so it made me think, like, what's the scariest animal in the world? Like, what's the one animal that, let's come up with a list of animals and decide who is the king of the hill. What's the scariest animal?
You know which animals freak me out that most people love? Of. People love these animals, but they freak me out is, horses. Horses freak me out.
Yeah, you say that. Camels freak you out.
Yeah, I don't want to run.
Real scary stuff, like rattlesnakes. That's scary.
I'm talking about like serious, scary animals. And what's the scariest?
I think like grizzly bears.
Bears are up there, man. Bears
buffalo are scary. Like they're those so crazy powerful.
Water buffalo, those water buffalo in Africa, those African buffalo, they have more, the male African buffalo has more testosterone than any other species on the planet. And you watch those things when lions, I mean, they will gore lions. They will defend their young. But I'm just thinking of, because it got me thinking about sharks. And sharks are scary. You know, when Jaws first came out, that's one of the scariest movies. But it's in the water.
Yeah, you have to be in the water to go get it.
You have to be in the water. So if I'm on land, a shark, I have no fear of a shark, right? If I'm in a boat, I have no fear of a shark unless it's the Megalodon. And then, you know, then we got problems. But I have no, but it got me thinking about, you know, crocodile that can be in the water and chase you down on land, right? Or a hippopotamus that could be in both, that is responsible for more deaths, human deaths, than any other animal in Africa, the hippopotamus. You know, what other animals, the grizzly bear, imagine being mauled. Remember the scene from the Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Amazing.
That scene is, it makes, it's like, if you got mauled by a bear, it felt like that was what it would look like. And he wouldn't survive, but a grizzly bear, a polar bear, like that shit is crazy.
Like, yeah, bears are pretty wild.
Not even to mention, like Travis said, the snakes or like the spiders, like a tarantula is a scary, not that it could kill you necessarily, but it's a scary, scary.
Oh, dude, thing. I know which one is number one without a doubt. The Caucasian rattlesnake. we forgot
the Caucasian rattlesnake. Well, by far, the human beings are the scariest.
There hasn't been much mention of the Caucasian rattlesnake recently.
We haven't
Caucasian
talked about rattlesnake.
He's been caged. He's been caged.
It has been. But I don't know. Like I was thinking, even in the water, the shark isn't even. They were showing killer whales, dude. Killer whales are crazy. Killer whales. They were showing killer whales working as a team. They are intelligent, and they were literally. They would smack the water with their fin to shock the shark, its senses, and then eat the shark. Like,
wow.
Like the stuff that they do, like the intelligence that they have, it's just crazy.
We need to end this quarantine.
Think about what the scariest animal.
We need to end this because you're starting to go places that are starting to scare me a little bit.
I don't know, man. There's a lot going on in this brain. There you go. There's your segue. Brain of Blandino.
Wow. And there he is. Name dropping. God damn it. I can't even talk.
I'm gonna leave it in. What was that?
Name dropping. Now you're location dropping.
Oh, so somebody that's like on Facebook or on Twitter or in social media.
Instagram, yeah.
Location drop. It's not like you were hanging out with, you know, Tom Cruise last night.
That's like I went to Mastro's.
Yeah, yeah. That's like Joe went to Mastro's or, you know, flew, you know. Oh, Charles de Gaulle. The security lines of Charles de Gaulle are so long. It's in the spring. You know, it's like the location dropping is, especially on Instagram, is outrageous.
Oh, right? Dude, any girl that's been to Catch LA has a picture of her in front of that door.
And 100%.
If you go to Mastro's Malibu, you better be damn, you're stopping and taking a picture in front of that blue, you know, the blue sign. I don't do that.
You always, that's all we do now. It's like, what are we, this is these little snippets of, it's literally one, less than 1%, 0.0006% of our life, right? That we're going to spend at Mastro's or we're going to spend at the Eiffel Tower, or we're going to spend it. But that's what you'll see on Instagram. And that's what you'll see because we're putting our best foot, what we believe to be our best foot forward. And here, this is our amazing life when 99% of our life is me sitting watching TV or me sitting at my computer doing work or me, you know, playing with my kids.
Dude, I've had a whole rant about this. I don't remember where, if it was recorded or not, probably not because I don't record stuff very often, but I remember it's like you go to Mastro's and you tag yourself in your location. Look where I'm at. I've never seen anybody tag like, oh, I'm at Wendy's getting a double patty.
I'm at Walmart.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. DeBlandino just checked in at Target.
Right. Even Target's a little bit of a, people love Target now, but I'm talking like you would maybe check in at Target, but you would never check in at Walmart. It's this weird socioeconomic thing. I think should.
Walmart is, Target's higher than Walmart.
Oh, dude, that's a real thing. Just like people, really? Costco is like a bigger flex than Sam's Club. We should flip the script. And
there's a flex there. Flex between Costco and Sam's Club,
dude. This is Morona, homie.
What are the fees? What are the yearly fees for both?
Can I put that on, like, I'm not on dating apps, but if I do go on a dating app, can I put that on my profile? I go to Costco.
Just say what you would say on a dating app, you'd say Costco over Sam's.
I would say Costco over Sam's.
Yeah.
I go, when I'm not having dinner at Mastro's in Malibu six nights a week, I'm usually shopping at Target and Costco.
People put
no
that.
Way, not Walmart and Sam's Club.
Target, yeah, I'm telling you.
So Sam's Club's $45 annually and Costco's $60 annually.
Boom. Oh, see, that's a flex, dude. That's that extra 15.
It's a flex.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do the ultimate flex right now.
Extra dollars.
I've got a membership to a year. Both. Come at me. Boom. I'm telling you, we should change it up. And every time we go to somewhere like very basic, 7-Eleven, grabbing a water, the 7-Eleven brand. Like I'm gonna start checking in every time
getting
I go.
A Slurpee.
Yeah, 7-Eleven. You know,
well, that's how champion became okay. popular again,
okay.
right?
Okay, next week. Here's the deal. This week, let's see who can come up with the best worst flex.
Okay.
So you've got to do it on. Let's do it on. Do you have Instagram, Travis?
No. Well, I once had a friend tell me I've never done anything in my life because I've never put anything online.
Clearly, you haven't done anything.
I haven't. So
did it even happen?
Let's see who can come up with the best worst flex.
Like all right.
That. All right. This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino. Please follow me on Twitter @DeanBlandino and Instagram @Dean.Blandino. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @RulesPodcast and be sure to rate our podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.